Next is, are the parties here and in the matter of George Lewis Farmer? Please step forward. May we please have appearances of counsel?
Good afternoon. Olawaka Lapis Tar here on behalf of the Office of Attorney Ethics. First name is spelled OLUWAKOLAPO. Last name is spelled Tar, SAPARA.
Good afternoon. George Palmer here on behalf of myself.
Counsel, welcome. I just want to remind both sides, this is not an opportunity to relitigate the entirety of the matter. We have time limitations that we're going to do our best to try to adhere to, and I encourage you to confine your arguments to the appropriate forum that we're in and the time that's been allotted. Mr. Sapara.
Good afternoon, Chief Justices, Associate Justices. Thank you again for your time. This matter comes before the court on a motion for reciprocal discipline following respondent George Lewis Farmer's indefinite suspension from the practice of law in Maryland. The OAE relies on its brief in this matter and the arguments made before the Disciplinary Review Board on February 20th, 2025. As detailed in our prior arguments, the OAE submits that a lengthy suspension is warranted here. This matter arises out of Maryland, where respondent is not licensed nor authorized to practice law. Despite his lack of authorization, respondent charged his elderly, blind, incapacitated client excessive legal fees for work he could not legally perform. Respondent charged Louise Williams Marsh, an elderly widow who had been diagnosed with severe dementia and already had an attorney, a retainer fee of $8,500. Respondent not only represented Ms. Marsh, but also represented her daughter-in-law, Thuan Nguyen, who sought control of Ms. Marsh's trust. Respondent acknowledged at the time to both Ms. Marsh and Ms. Nguyen that representing them both was a conflict of interest, and this is evidenced by his retainer agreement signed by Ms. Marsh and the waiver signed by Ms. Nguyen. However, he has since refused to admit that there was a conflict in any of his disciplinary matters. Respondent told Ms. Marsh's attorney, J. Lawrence Kent and Sandy Spring Bank, that he was her attorney and demanded that they turn over her trust documentation and records to his possession. Mr. Kent and Sandy Springs Bank refused to acquiesce to respondent's demands, causing him to engage in a meritless and unrelenting campaign against them by filing an ethics grievance and a federal lawsuit against Mr. Kent and filing a regulatory complaint against the bank. When Mr. Kent filed an emergency petition for guardianship of Ms. Marsh's person and property in an effort to protect her from being financially exploited, respondent attempted to thwart the appointment of her much-needed guardians. Respondent tried, unsuccessfully, to obtain Pro Hac Vitae admission in Maryland. This attempt was unsuccessful because he was unable to obtain the required attorney sponsorship. In fact, local counsel informed respondent that they would not get involved because Ms. Marsh already had court-appointed counsel, and that Ms. Nguyen had no standing to challenge the appointment. When his efforts failed, respondent attempted to charge Ms. Marsh over $150,000 for legal work he could not lawfully perform in the state of Maryland. In fact, in his invoice, respondent claimed to have performed 416 hours of legal services at his $400 an hour rate. When Ms. Marsh's guardians refused to pay, respondent filed a federal lawsuit in Maryland, which was dismissed with prejudice because respondent was not licensed in Maryland and thus his retainer fee was invalid and against public policy. And because his claim that Mr. Kent engaged in willful and malicious acts was not grounded in any cognizable common law tort under Maryland law. Respondent has since filed a lawsuit in New Jersey seeking payment of his legal fees. This lawsuit was dismissed by the trial court. The dismissal was affirmed by the New Jersey Appellate Division. Further, respondent filed an ethics grievance against Mr. Kent, then claimed that Maryland Bar Council only pursued its ethics matter against him out of retaliation and bias. Respondent's continued resistance and utter disregard for the disciplinary process is concerning. Respondent has taken every opportunity during the disciplinary process to make vicious and baseless accusations against those involved in Ms. Marsh's case and his Maryland disciplinary matter, while continuing to assert that he is blameless. The OAE submits that respondent engaged in a serious conflict of interest in violation of RPC 1.7A1. He failed to adequately explain the conflict to Ms. Marsh and her daughter-in-law in violation of RPC 1.4C. And he failed to decline or terminate representation of one or both of them once it became apparent that the matter involved a serious conflict of interest in violation of RPC 1.16A1. Respondent engaged in the unauthorized practice of law in Maryland, where he's neither licensed nor authorized to practice. He wrote letters and demands as Ms. Marsh's attorney, filed motions and lawsuits, and invoiced his legal services, all in violation of RPC 5.5A1. In total, respondent charged Ms. Marsh $167,089.18 in legal fees for his unauthorized and improper representation of her over a 2.5 month period. It is per se unreasonable to charge legal fees for work that cannot be performed without breaking the law, and it is a violation of RPC 1.5A. When respondent could not get attorneys and banks to bend to his will, he filed frivolous lawsuits and grievances against them in violation of RPC 3.1. And finally, as the disciplinary review board found, despite losing at every turn, respondent persisted in abusing the judicial system to attempt to isolate Ms. Marsh from her guardians, sabotage her relationship with Mr. Kent, and gain control of her finances. Respondent's meritless motion and complaints were prejudicial to the administration of justice in violation of RPC 8.48. Respondent's abhorrent behavior in Maryland, his exploitation of Ms. Marsh's incapacity and advanced age, his unrelenting attacks against those who stood in his way, is enhanced by his continued disrespect for the legal system and ethical standards. Continue to fight in New Jersey Superior Court about Maryland's jurisdiction over him. He didn't like the decision from the Disciplinary Review Board, so he asked that this court remand the matter so that he could try again for a decision he preferred. He has failed to accept responsibility for his action, and he has shown no remorse. We ask that you follow the rulings of the Maryland Supreme Court, the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania, and the Supreme Court of Colorado, and suspend respondent for his misconduct. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. If not, thank you for your time.
Questions, anyone? Thank you, Councilor.
Thank you.
Mr. Farmer?
I have a very concise, approximately 8 minute presentation. And at that point in time, I don't know whether you'd want to have my counsel here, my colleague, say anything else in response, which time I'd ask for about 5 minutes of rebuttal to conclude. Is that okay?
Please go ahead. Yes.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Justices, may it please the court. I'm George Farmer, appearing on my own behalf as a result of an unfortunate situation that occurred in Maryland, where I was asked to help my good friend's sister and protect her 94-year-old blind mother-in-law, Mrs. Marsh, from the unscrupulous efforts of her Maryland attorney named Lawrence Kent, who had Mrs. Marsh sign an amendment to her trust agreement, naming him as trustee of her trust that once had $5 million in it, and who had her sign bank signature cards, making him a signatory on her bank accounts, thus giving him unfettered access to her money. There appeared to be $1 million missing from her accounts. The situation is unfortunate because I have had to defend myself in multiple venues, and because in no uncertain terms, I tried everything possible in my efforts to help the 94-year-old blind Mrs. Marsh, who suffered from dementia, find out what happened to her $1 million. I admit that sometimes I do not have good bedside manners. I admit I do not use flowery and complimentary language. I'm blunt and to the point. I recognize that this irritates people. I also recognize that Mr. Kent admitted that he wrote checks for Mrs. Marsh's accounts without authorization before he had her sign the amendment to her trust, naming him as trustee, and before he became a signatory on her accounts, and before it was discovered there was $1 million missing. I admit I irritated a number of people along the way trying to help Mrs. Marsh. However, irritating people and calling them out should not have led to an ethics complaint against me. The situation is unfortunate because up until now, no one has listened to me, and some even admitted they don't want to listen to me. Here, starting with the guardianship court in Maryland, It did not listen to me when I applied pro hoc vice admission, when I told it that I was not able to find a local sponsoring attorney because Mrs. Marsh's court-appointed attorney refused to allow my proposed local attorney to talk to Mrs. Marsh. It did not listen to me. It denied my pro hoc vice application and did not consider any of the filings that I made to it on Mrs. Marsh's behalf. Next, bar counsel, who is the person designated by the Attorney Grievance Commission of Maryland to investigate and prosecute allegations of ethical violations, did not listen to me when she refused to even bring an action against Mr. Kent when I filed an ethics complaint against him, identifying 7 different times and events where he violated 13 rules of professional conduct, all of which were supported by documentary evidence and affidavits from various people who had firsthand personal knowledge, including one that indicated that Kent forged Mrs. Marsh's signature on the bank's signature card. Bar counsel did, however, listen to me when I called her out and told her in less than complimentary manner, quote, "Surely you jest. Even Mrs. Marsh, who was blind, could see that Mr. Kent's actions were and are improper," end quote. As a result of me insulting her, bar counsel filed an ethics complaint against me, to which there was a trial in front of a Maryland trial court judge. The trial court judge did not listen to me either. In fact, instead, she showed her true colors that she did not even want to listen to me. After the Attorney Grievance Commission put on its case in 3 entire days, she asked me how long I anticipated it would take for me to put on my case, and I said 5 to 6 hours. Her unbelievable biased and predisposed response was, quote, "I don't think that, you know, 5 hours of just your testimony is even remotely reasonable. I don't think that, you know, the court is going to allow you to go on for 5 hours of testimony," end quote. She obviously was predisposed to rule against me before I even had a chance to put on my defense. Her mind was made up. Similarly, the Maryland Supreme Court did not listen to me either. Not only did both Maryland courts not listen to me, they came to conclusions that were based upon conjecture and innuendos, as well as incorrect facts, rather than on clear and convincing evidence. My written submission to this court identifies the manner and the extent of this. Now, with respect to New Jersey Disciplinary Review Board, not only did it not listen to me, it made things up, which it had to do in order to support its findings. I implore you, please, please listen to me by reading my submission and base your decision on true and proper facts and decide on your own whether there is clear and convincing evidence to sanction me. This court is required to accept only facts that were established in Maryland courts and should not rely upon the DRB's speculation and erroneous assertions and contrived facts. I understand you have to accept the facts that were proven in Maryland courts. However, most importantly, you do not have to accept the conclusions the Maryland courts of the DRB arrived at. I implore you again, please, please listen to me by reading my submission and see the following. Both Maryland courts did not listen to me when I asserted they lacked personal jurisdiction and venue was improper. In fact, neither ruled on my assertion. I ask you to please rule on that. Please also rule my constitutional rights were violated, that I did not receive due process because, number one, the hearing judge was predisposed against me, and the Maryland courts based their decision on erroneous and distorted conception of the facts for law, and the Supreme Court did not perform a de novo review, and I was precluded from putting in my defenses. Again, I implore you, please listen to me and read my submission and see there was not clear and convincing evidence to warrant sanction me with respect to each charge. Specifically, with respect to the unauthorized practice of law, my activities in Maryland did not constitute the practice of law as defined by Maryland Code 10-101H, except for the Maryland courts not listening to me when I assert nothing I did other than attempting to file motions in conjunction with my pro hoc vice application constituted the practice of law under Section 101H1. The Supreme Court ruled that, quote, "We need not scrutinize every service listed on a services to conclude that, at minimum, Mr. Farmer engaged in the unauthorized practice of law when he filed the motions," end quote. It did not listen to me when I asserted that it was necessary for the court to do such so that it could evaluate everything I did and compare it to Maryland law and determine whether things like writing a letter or making a phone call constituted the practice of law under Section 101H1. And I said that it was necessary in order to evaluate whether the fee I charged or what it would determine was for legal services was reasonable. Since it did not have subject matter jurisdiction over fees I charged for anything I did that constituted non-legal services. I could not have provided legal services to Mrs. Marsh, even if I wanted to, because Mr. Kent did not provide me with the documents that I requested. In fact, with respect to the motions, I attempted to file for the court to consider if it granted my pro vice motion. It did not listen to me and not rule on or even mention my assertion that Merlin Rule 19-305.5C2 completely absolves me of the unauthorized practice of law, discharging that they were filed in anticipation of the court will grant my pro vice motion. With respect to conflict, there was no conflict. Both clients wanted the same thing. No guardianship, Mr. Kent to leave them alone, and for me to find out what happened to the missing $1 million. The Supreme Court did not listen to me when I served. The hearing judge erred in its finding that Mrs. Marsh and her daughter-in-law had a conflict because, quote, Mrs. Marsh's court-appointed attorney, Ms. McQueen, informed the court that Mrs. Marsh desired a guardian of her property or person, contrary to the position advanced by respondent and Ms. Nguyen, end quote. It did not listen to me when I told the Supreme Court that this was not true, and I provided the actual transcript, which you have, to prove that Ms. McQueen did not inform the guardianship of this. The DRB recommends a 3-year suspension that is primarily based upon its erroneous and unsubstantiated finding that I tried to gain control of Mrs. Marsh's assets. This court is required to accept the facts that were established in the Merlin courts and not rely upon the DRB's speculation and erroneous assertions. In doing so, it will see there was never any suggestion, let alone a finding, or even any scintilla of evidence before the Merlin courts that I tried to gain control of Mrs. Marsh's assets. The DRB invented this finding when there was none to begin with. The DRB's assertion is pure speculation, innuendo, and is simply wrong. The only ways that I could actually have gained control of assets would have been, one, to become a signatory on her financial accounts, as Kent did, or two, become a trustee of her trust, as Kent did, or three, be granted the power of attorney for her, as Kent did, or to become the beneficiary of her trust. There is no evidence of this taking place or even suggested in Maryland. There is no evidence because none of this ever happened. Asserting otherwise is irresponsible, reprehensible, scurrilous, and libelous. DRB had to make this up in order to support its 3-year suspension recommendation. I respectfully request the court ignore the DRB's recommendation and base its decision on true facts, of which there were none, other than both Mrs. Marsh and her daughter-in-law wanted the same thing. I'll reserve my 5 minutes for my colleague.
Mr. Farmer, our process does not call upon the OAE to stand up and speak at this point in time, and I'm gonna hold off on that. Are there more things you want to say?
Just to conclude.
And just a conclusion.
Yes.
And I trust, Mr. Sapara, I trust there's nothing that the OAE needs to be heard on at this point. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. Since the Merlin courts did not rule on the lack of personal jurisdiction and venue issues, I respectfully request this court so rule and dismiss the matter. However, if you're not so inclined, then I respectfully request you rule my due process rights were violated because of the Merlin hearing judge's predisposition and or the Merlin court's reliance upon incomplete and erroneous restored conception of the facts and or law, and or as precluded from putting on my defenses, and or as well as the Maryland Supreme Court's failure to perform its requisite de novo review and find sanctions are not warranted. Failing this, I respectfully request the court base its decision on true, proper, and complete facts and law and rule that sanctions are not warranted. If you're not so inclined, if you decide to rely upon Maryland court's erroneous and complete law and facts and decide to impose a sanction, then I respectfully request it you ignore the DRB's suggestion because it's predicated upon a faulty premise that I was trying to gain control of Mrs. Marsh's assets. Instead, acknowledge the absolution effect of Merlin Rule 19-305.5C2 completely absolves me from the practice of law charge. I also respectfully request this court look at the totality of circumstances and see that the nature of my efforts were intended to investigate multiple inappropriate and unscrupulous actions of a Merlin attorney and to find out what happened to the $1 million of a 94-year-old blind woman's money. My actions were taken with the full knowledge and approval of both my clients. Neither suffered any harm. There is no neglect or inattention on my part. I did not fail to respond to their communication. I diligently pursued their interest. I communicated repeatedly and received complete authorization to proceed from both of them. I cooperated fully with bar counsel and did not fail to respond to requests for information. None of my actions were dishonest, deceitful, or fraudulent. I tried to be admitted pro hoc vice and terminated my services immediately after being denied. All of my actions were taken in furtherance of my client's mutual same interest. I did not misrepresent anything. I didn't mislead anyone to believe I was licensed to practice law in Maryland, and I did not fail to represent my clients competently and diligently. I participated fully in the disciplinary proceedings in spite of my medical condition that limited my participation. I did not conceal anything to bar counsel nor to my clients. A three-year suspension in of itself is punitive, heavy-handed, inappropriate, particularly compared to the DRB's 1 to 2 year request. Plus, there's no need to suspend me. I'm 71 years old, and I've wound down my practice with an eye towards retirement. I only have one case left that I would like to be able to finish for my one last client. Suspending me at this juncture in my career would not punish me, it would only punish my client, prejudice my client. Not challenging the DRB's recommendation because I'm at the end of my career and taking the position of who cares is one option here. However, my reputation is paramount to me, and I will not stand for the DRB's unfounded assertion that I tried to gain control of Mrs. Marsh's trust assets, nor will I keep silent while getting railroaded by misinformed, biased, predisposed courts who violated my due process and by an admittedly clueless DRB who made up false facts to justify its recommendations. I respectfully request this court not merely rubber stamp the Maryland courts and DRB's findings, but rather finally listen to me and read my submission and consider all the true and proper facts, and in doing so, find that there was not clear and convincing evidence to discipline me. Lastly, thank you for listening to me.
Thank you, Mr. Farmer. Court's in recess. We'll take the matter under advisement.